Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Weather can be unpredictable in the winter. Michelin Endurance XT silicone wiper blades, get them at Walmart, last two times longer. So it's a Tuesday in the NFL. You get you heal a little bit. If you're 3-1 or 4-0, you feel great right now. And the Rams last year, we said this in the offseason, everybody kind of bailed on the Rams, but they were 9-7 in a great division. You would hope that's your down year. They had an ugly win over the Giants Sunday, but it puts them at 3-1. They've got to feel good about where they're at, and their Pro Bowl left tackle, Andrew Whitworth, is now joining us. The bed behind him is made. He understands, making the peeps and your wife's happy. I can tell you that on television, the bed's made.
That's it. As long as she's happy, I'm good. We're 3-1 and the wife's happy. I can't be doing much better right now.
You were telling me during the break when we talked that you thought Sunday was going to be ugly. McVay talked about it. Why did you know it was going to look like it did?
Well, I think you really look at the Giants. They've played physical football in their first three games leading up to ours, and we're really in every game and had an opportunity, you know, up to the half, really, even against the Niners, and just continued to turn the football over multiple times in each one of those games. But defensively, they've kept themselves in it. They've made you have to fight and claw for yardage in the running game and find a way to beat them in the passing game. And so I think we knew it was going to be that kind of game. I don't think we thought it'd be as hard as it was going into the fourth quarter. But you know what? We found a way to have the drive you need to win. And at this time of year and as football seasons go, you know, they don't count how you made the birdie. They only count that you made it. So yeah, you got the W and you move on.
So I'm going to ask you a question that I don't know an answer to, and I don't think most of our fans do, because most of us didn't play football at a high level. The Rams are the second best team after half in the NFL, and I tend to think the difference between good coaches and great are adjustments. But you only have 15 minutes. You walk in there, you're down to about 13. So clearly, Sean and you guys are a very good team post-half. You have very limited time. What kind of adjustments are possible to make, Andrew, at half?
Well, I think really more for Sean and the staff, it's more about what they kind of thought they'd expect they'd see early in this season. You really look at it. We've played a couple teams, Philly really being the only exception, that we really didn't have any clue what they were going to play and how they'd play. And, you know, you look at Dallas with Mike Nolan, didn't have really any clue what he was going to do front-wise or what defense, you know, if he's been influenced by lately would kind of dictate how they played. And I think, you know, Buffalo is one of those teams. It's the first time we've really played them and since we've been together. So I think that, you know, with us this week, we kind of knew the Giants had kind of changed up what they'd done a little bit in each game. And we knew there'd be some strategy there to understand, okay, this is how they want to play, so this is how we'll play in the second half. And I think that's one of the things we've done really well this season is guys have just stuck with the plan, waited to hear what the attack method is, and then go out and execute it.
You would think this goes – what I'm about to say is the opposite of what you'd think. You would think as an offensive lineman that run blocking is – you're getting your hands dirty, you're rolling on the turf. It's like wrestling with a helmet, and you're like, ah, that's no fun. Pass blocking would be great. You couple steps back, you push a guy off to the left. But you guys are really a power running team, and I've talked to offensive linemen through the years, and they're like, no, actually, I'd rather put a hat on somebody and drive him. I hate dropping back because if I make one mistake, I'm on television as the lousy offensive lineman that can't block. So for you, you're a rushing team. You have good receivers, but would you rather run it 51 or pass it 51?
That depends on who I'm facing, Colin. You know what? If I get the right defensive end, I don't mind throwing it 51 times. But, no, I think any O-lineman would rather run it 51 times. There's a lot less pressure in the sense of in the passing game, there's so many factors that can affect whether the play's good or not. The coverage that's run, really, who you're facing, how good their rush is, all those things. But in the running game, it's like, hey, you can make an effort and just move somebody out of the way, and the other blocks can be okay. And if the running back hits, gets it, you've got an opportunity to have success. So I think you just kind of feel like you can be more aggressive. You can really go after it, and one really great block can dictate the run. And so I think that's why, as linemen, you get excited just to have an opportunity to fire off and make that impact in the running game.
So you're playing with no fans. I really noticed it this Sunday. I was watching a Raiders-Buffalo game, and a guy made a great catch. And I for the Bills, and I thought, God, he doesn't even get an ovation. I mean, it was just such a beautiful play. And I thought, if I'm an offensive guy, I just love, you make the catch, you come up, and it's like, oh, there's nobody in the fan stands. Is it odd? For, I mean, you played at LSU, craziest fans in college football. Has it been a little different? I mean, it's you got more people at practice last year.
Yeah, it's been strange. I'm not going to lie. Especially some of these road games, just – going on a road game, your expectation in the NFL is just the energy, the force that's going to be against you, how loud it's going to be, all those things. And to walk into some of these stadiums and then realize, like, wow, this thing's completely empty. And the only thing in there is just some streaming music. It's definitely just such a strange – every game you have one point of the game where you kind of go, where in the world am I right now? What are we doing? At some point, just in a TV timeout on the sideline or something, just because it just doesn't feel like it's real. It almost feels like you're in the middle of a dream in a couple some of these game scenarios. And so it really can see that it takes a locked-in focus for a lot of these teams to have their own energy, their own passion, and your sideline is even more important than ever. Those guys having that energy and that passion and be able to get it up for guys that are on the football field.
You know, it's interesting. McVay comes into the league 3 years ago, and he really went out there. He doesn't like to play starters in preseason. There's less hitting in practice. And, you know, it was new. I saw a lot when Chip Kelly was at Oregon. He was doing stuff that had never been done. He wanted 5:45 a.m. practices. He felt that athletes were better served in the morning than in the afternoon when our, you know, body rhythms slow down. And Sean kind of went against the grain. I'm not playing starters preseason. Let's have less hitting in practice. So you've been with this system now multiple years with Sean. Do you think it's beneficial? Let's take a big macro look on the way Sean coaches. Has he tweaked it at all?
I think that I would say this year has been more physical and more of a physical challenge. Like when we practiced, we really had an intent on it being physical and the practices being intense that way in the limited time we had. But I think really for him, it's less about all the sports science and what time you practice and all that kind of mess against the grain. His against the grain is more anything we do, we're going to do it at an extreme level of efficiency and intensity. And if we're not doing that, then we're not doing it. We're not doing any monotonous, just, hey, let's do this just because, you know, for 20 years, they said you should walk through at this time on a Saturday. I mean, we don't do any of that kind of stuff. And so it's really about our walkthroughs for an hour before practice every single day are just as intense, just as alert. The efficiency has to be at the same exact standard that we run a full speed play. And so it's just you, when you're doing something, you're doing it at a level that you feel like you're in the middle of a game. And that's the expectation from him and how it should be executed, how every block should look. It doesn't matter if we're stepping through it or running full speed. And so I feel like what we do is maybe reduced to some teams, but the efficiency level is extremely high.
Finally, Andrew, no preseason. And so now you're through week four. People have told me in the league forever, you need about 3 weeks of hitting, real game hitting. That's why preseason matters. Now that you've played your whole career with a preseason and 1 year without it, this morning, if I asked you, what do we do with preseason in the NFL, Andrew Whitworth? What do we do? What would be your answer?
Well, as a 15-year vet, I would say never do preseason again. But, you know, I would say that, honestly, I do see that there's some value for the back end of your roster for your young guys to get a chance to have a live snap before the real thing happens. I think that that can be done in a controlled scrimmage setting, too. But, you know, scrimmaging other teams like we have done with Sean the last few years, that's been a big MO of ours. But – I think honestly, if you reduced it at least to two, maybe one, just to give a game where the young guys can get out there and compete a little, and you might could see what you had. I don't think that there's a big need for preseason. I really just don't think it matters, and I think it's more something that maybe in the old system and how the league was. Maybe it was efficient, maybe it wasn't. But I think nowadays, really, honestly, college football does it every single season. There's no reason you can't prepare efficiently 6 weeks and be ready to go if you practice methodically and have a plan for how you're going to get guys developed physically and ready to go. I mean, I think we've seen that with our group over the last few years and having not played any preseason snaps together. And I think it hasn't affected us at all.
It's great talking to you. 3-1, Rams at Washington, Sunday early game. That can be a trap game. They are really physical up front, really super physical up front. So good luck to you and the Rams traveling out west, Andrew. We appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you. Have a great week.
So the Rams are 3-1. The Clippers had a disappointing season, and they won a playoff series. Lakers in the final. Dodgers, Walker Buehler's throwing tonight against the Padres. It's really a good time to be in L.A. if you're a sports fan. And you get smart guys like that. Ooh, I just got a text. Ooh, source.
Haven't done this in a while.
I just got one. Hold on. Can you do the headline news real quick?
You can toss it to me, yes.
All right. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the headline news.
Well, Doc Rivers was introduced as the 76ers head coach this week, and he credited the talents of young stars Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons as the reason why he chose to go to Philly.
I was not going to just coach anybody. I can tell you that. I was ready to take a break, and it just depended on the team that was available. When you look at these players, these young players, and their potential, the fact that they've had, so much success in some ways at the ages that they are already, and where I believe they can go, for me is a job you just couldn't turn down.
This isn't a bad job.
Listen, I could make the argument, and he said I was ready to step away. There really is no player, there's no big in the league quite like Joel Embiid. That's not arguable. He's got some Shaq in him. And there is no player like Simmons in the league, although flawed, 6'10 and a half point guard. You're really getting two unique body types and skill sets in the NBA. Now, he's got a fix. To me, it's also, can we get shooters for Ben Simmons? He doesn't need to be a great three-point shooter. He's a great distributor to three-point shooters, so get him shooters.
At this point, you know what both of them are. So, yes, build a team around them. And I think for Doc, this was a healthy challenge. It's not a dysfunctional situation. It's just a situation that needs to be coached well and built well. Now, the one thing about Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid is they have injury issues. Ben Simmons had to leave the bubble to have knee surgery. Joel Embiid had an ankle injury in the bubble. Obviously, Ben Simmons missed his first year with a foot injury. Embiid missed his first two seasons with a foot injury. So they have lots of injury issues. But building a team around them, putting together a championship culture around these two young players, and seeing what they can do in the next few years is going to require somebody like Doc Rivers, who has won a championship. And despite whatever you feel about how things ended in LA, I don't think it was the right move to move off of Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers' fault that it didn't work with the Clippers. But they had some success there. Obviously, the goal was to win a championship. I think they would have done that next year within the next few years with some tweaks here and there. But this is a good situation for the Sixers and for Doc Rivers.
Well, the best job opening now is the Clippers. The second best was the Sixers. And so if you get fired as the Clippers guy, then you should take the Sixers job, because those are the two jobs where I get stars. I get two stars.
You get stars, you get a good owner, and hopefully you get some stability. Like, they did have some stability with Doc Rivers. I just don't know, like, the report that there was, like, a reaction. Like, obviously, you're disappointed you didn't win a championship. Their season ended with a disappointment. Like, they should have been in the Western Conference Finals, and they should have been in the Finals and win a championship. That was the goal of putting that team together. Whoever ends up there needs to have the commitment that can't be the bottom line next year. Like, right. this is a long-term situation. Are we going to get the source, or you're still?
No, I've got a source. Okay. He asked me a question. He did not deliver news.
Oh, okay.
So my sources usually deliver news. When they ask questions, I have to feed them something, and they may come back and give me news.
Okay. That's how that transaction works.
Well, it's a relationship. you know, it's like my marriage. I mostly listen, but occasionally I have input.
That's a healthy setup. So Bam Adebayo missed games 2 and 3 of the NBA Finals with a neck strain, and he was upgraded to questionable for game 4 tonight and is hoping to play. He spoke about how hard it has been to watch from the sidelines.
I don't like missing games. It's, you know, it's so if you're wondering if I'm really injured, then there you go, because I only missed one game. I played through bruises. I played through getting beat up. And but it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I make it to my first finals and it's like, bro, like we dream of things like that. So it's been difficult for me mentally because it hurts me that I can't be out there and help my team.
Goran Dragic is still listed as doubtful for game 4, likely not going to be back. He spoke as well about how difficult it's been to get to the finals and then not be healthy enough to play and contribute. If Bam is back, he's averaging 17.8 points per game, 10.9 rebounds per game, and 4.6 assists per game throughout the playoffs. He's obviously a huge factor for the Heat. I do think that the Lakers are going to approach this game a bit more locked in than they were last game, a little bit more aggressive.
I think they're going to go right at the basket. They're going to try to get Jimmy Butler, and if Bam plays in foul trouble, they're going to be hyper aggressive, and they're going to feed AD the ball over and over and over.
Coincidentally, I think that's what the Heat should do as well, because getting AD in foul trouble is key. Yeah. you're not going to get LeBron in foul trouble, obviously, but getting AD in foul trouble and moving the ball around, I really felt like their offense gets a little stagnant once they get into trouble. Like, keep moving the ball around and get it to your shooters. Interesting to see how this will go tonight. Finally, Daniel Jones got off to a rocky start this year, but Joe Judge is shutting down any kind of talk that they'll be making a change at quarterback. He said, if you're asking if Daniel is our quarterback, Daniel is our quarterback. That's who we're playing with. We support him. We have a lot of confidence in him. We have faith in him. We can't sit around here and handcuff our quarterback by looking over his shoulder all the time and second guessing everything he does. I feel like the bottom of the NFL quickly separated from the top of the NFL.
Yeah.
This season. 0-4 teams, obviously the Giants, Jets, Texans, and Falcons.
Well, mostly teams that had new stuff being introduced, quarterback or coach. Atlanta's an exception.
Well, the one-win teams, yes. The Jets, no. The Texans, no. But the one-win teams, obviously the Bengals.
Yeah.
And the Chargers now. Well, they didn't expect it to be that, but
Chargers are a pretty good one-win team.
The Chargers don't feel like a one-win team.
No, Kansas City and Tampa, those are winnable games in the second half, fourth quarter.
Now the Broncos, Eagles, Washington, Cowboys, Lions, even the Vikings are a little strange.
I think the Vikings are
too.
If you look at the Vikings' offensive personnel, it's really good. Best running back, nice tandem now that Justin Jefferson's a star. Like, Vikings have all sorts of players. It's just that they used to be mostly on defense. It feels like last 2 years they're on offense.
Usually the bottom of the NFL we just kind of forget about and push off very quickly. I think maybe it's just because it's Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields. I'm so interested to see who continues to just bulldoze their way to the number one overall pick, because if it's the Giants or the Jets, it's going to be fascinating to see what they do. Because Daniel Jones, 3-9 record as a starter last year, obviously 0-4 this year. I mean, if they end up with the number one overall pick, do you stick with Daniel Jones?
I think
it depends on the market, but I just don't know how, if you're New York, like if it's the Giants and the Jets at the top.
Well, look at the top. Look who's leading every division. Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, seriously, Ben Roethlisberger. Like, if you look at every division leader, Patrick Mahomes, okay, so let's go. Oh, Russell Wilson. It's a pretty obvious trend here.
I mean, you can't trick your way around
Aaron Rodgers.
No.
Belichick got fired without it. Like, if you have Trevor Lawrence and you don't have a flaw, and he doesn't have really a flaw, it's Andrew Luck. You're nitpicking to find, you know, Andrew Luck, they were like, his arm is okay. You watched Andrew Luck. Do you ever think his arm was a problem? Like, Trevor Lawrence is the same thing. You really got to nitpick to find any problem.
No, but you do then have to be immediately committed to building the rest of your team around him, starting with the offensive line, because that's the situation with the Bengals and Burrow. If it's a New York team at the top of the draft.
Oh, it's going to be. Washington's got fight. It's going to be a New York team.
I thought the draft was amazing this year.
Oh, my God. Quarterbacks and New York teams at the top.
It'll just be popcorn time.
It will be. Enjoy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
By the way, some thoughts on the Texans fired Bill O'Brien. So they have no draft picks coming up. They have no cap space. What they have to do, and this is really uncomfortable for them, is to trade J.J. Watt. Because there's like four really good teams in the NFL. Seattle, Baltimore, don't have a pass rush. And he's about $15 million this year, $17.5 million next year. He's wildly popular in Houston, and he will be forever. But if you don't have draft picks and you don't have cap space going forward, you can get both moving one player. The two can't moves for Houston. I'm not moving Deshaun Watson and Laremy Tunsil, left tackle. Those aren't going anywhere. Those are premier top six in the league at their position. Outside of that, I'd move J.J. Watt. That's what I would do. And he's popular and he's great, but Seattle would, oh my God, he's perfect for Seattle. He's perfect for Baltimore. Actually, the Niners could use him. The Ravens could use him. There's a lot of good teams in this league. Pittsburgh's rare. Good team with a great pass rush. That's, you know, Colts now have more of a pass rush. Most teams in this league in the salary cap era get to the trading deadline, and there's one thing they know they need, they just can't afford it. If you can afford a $15 million defensive lineman, J.J. Watt's going to be available, and you can get one or two draft picks and cap space cleared, because you can't have all three. You can't have no picks, paying your quarterback a fortune, don't have a coach yet, no draft. You got to have something. I think you can solve a couple of your issues very quickly if you're Houston. You keep Laremy Tunsil, you keep Deshaun Watson, you move J.J. Watt. You can't tell me there's not a market for J.J. Watt. He feels like a Patriot. I can picture him in a Patriot uniform now. He honestly feels like he would be a great fit for the Ravens or the Seahawks. You know, now the Seahawks would be top heavy, but you know, that's DK Metcalf's cost you nothing, and he's a great player, so you can go with that. All right, coming up next, all the undefeated teams. I will tell you exactly precisely when they will lose their games, and that's coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Michelin Endurance XT silicone wiper blades, Walmart, last two times longer. Check them out. Extreme weather's coming up. Six remaining unbeaten teams in the National Football League. Six. So nobody's going to go 16-0. Now, we did think, Joy, that this year would be the year in which there would be more 13-14 win teams. The teams that returned good quarterbacks, good coaches, your Kansas City's, your Baltimore, Seattle's, you know, a lot of teams we thought would be that were good last year. They'd keep the momentum. We also thought if you were bad last year, how do you sandpaper the flaws? You didn't have a preseason. You didn't have OTAs. If you're reliant on like Joe Burrow, it's going to take you 5 or 6 weeks to really feel comfortable. So here's the six teams. I'm going to predict when they lose their first game, because I don't think anybody's going to go undefeated. All right, Buffalo Bills, 4-0. They are going to lose this week to the Titans. Because they're looking ahead to Kansas City on their schedule.
Okay.
Now look at that's the game of the week, right? They're going to go to Tennessee. Titans had a full week off because the Steeler game was postponed. And the Titans allow fewer points and passing yards than the Bills this season. So Tennessee's defense is worthy. And Buffalo sees Mahomes in the distance a little bit. I like Tennessee to beat Buffalo this week. How about the Steelers? Let's see. They got Philadelphia coming up. They got Cleveland coming up. Nope. I think they're going to lose at Tennessee. Again, Tannehill's faced the Steelers defense twice. He's 2-0. 96 passer rating. And again, I think that Philadelphia game has meaning. Eagles run a short week. Pittsburgh wins that game. I think they're going to beat Cleveland. I think Baker struggles under pressure, and Pittsburgh delivers lots of pressure. Steelers front seven is just pass rush central. Let's go to the Tennessee Titans now, who I'm apparently in love with. I actually think they're going to run the table and win a lot of these games. But that Thursday night football game against the Colts, and Titans have won 6 of 7 games, including the playoffs. The Colts are better defensively. I think if you look at that schedule, the Ravens are the following week. So it's in between. The Bears are physical on Fox, a big game. The Ravens coming up. First game against the Colts.
So they're going to go 9-0?
I really think they are. Again, they return the coach. They return the quarterback. This is the kind of team we thought would do well. They have an identity. They know what they do well. They brought everybody back. Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill. We thought they overpaid for Ryan Tannehill, but they brought, there's total continuity with this organization.
Yeah.
Let's go to Kansas City. All right, they're not going 16-0. Thursday night football. Buffalo Bills. I think the Bills beat the Kansas City Chiefs. Do you know the Bills have only allowed 18 points a game at home since the beginning of last season? Buffalo at home is a really good team, and I think they can score with Kansas City to a large degree if Kansas City doesn't get a pass rush. So I think the Bills knock off the Chiefs. On Thursday Night Football, big national TV game. It's a big moment for the Bills. All right, how about how the Packers? Let's see, they got, at Tampa next game. I'm going to give it to Tommy, even though they have extra prep. I think Tampa matches up well. I think Tampa, Tom Brady every week, passer rating, yards, Chris Godwin will be back. This is tough. You're going to go, Green Bay is going to go down to Tampa. That is going to be a massive TV game, big Fox game. It's going to be the biggest game in Tampa in a long time. Brady is great in these big games. So I'm going to take the better defense and a healthier offense, Chris Godwin, to up. Well, yeah, they'll probably be favored. Green Bay will be favored by a point or two. I'll take Tampa. Finally, the Seahawks. I got a lot of Buffalo love. You start looking at the schedule. Minnesota is going to give them some pushback this weekend. I think at Buffalo in week 9, they have back-to-back games. It's a sandwich game in between two division rivals, the Niners and the Rams, and Buffalo was sandwiched on the road right in between both. So I'll say week 9 at Buffalo. I got Buffalo beating Kansas City and Buffalo beating Seattle, and those are my predictions when these teams lose. In the NFL, like, I like Buffalo a lot. But if you start looking at who Buffalo has Mahomes is a couple of weeks. We saw this with Kansas City and Baltimore. Is the week before they played each other, they didn't play particularly. Kansas City didn't play the week before the Ravens didn't play well, and they didn't play last night the week after the Ravens very well. So this young Kansas City team had circled that Ravens game week before, week after. Kansas City doesn't play particularly well.
Yeah.
And it happens when you have two division rivals. You pay a big rival, then you have to go to Buffalo, then you come back for the Rams. And that Buffalo game, you just don't see it the same. You got to win those divisional games.
Get the same energy and emotion for it.
And you go cross country to Buffalo. And by the way, then it's cold in Buffalo. It's really cold out there. It's like late October in Buffalo or November.
Well, that'll be good for, you know, making sure the coaches keep their masks on.
And I do have a Tennessee going. Tennessee.
Yeah, you love Tennessee.
I don't love them. I love the fact that they've always been a franchise that feels a little loose.
But they're pretty consistent, though.
9-7 is their brand. And so we talked about all these teams that had continuity would be good.
Yeah.
We left everybody out except Tennessee. And I think that's why they brought Tannehill back. They just said, listen, here's what we are. We have some limitations. Tennessee is a little bit like New England with Cam. They're kind of built to play a Kansas City tough. Run game, just, you know, Tannehill and Cam make two or three big throws over the top. You have good defense. Like Tennessee, you know, Kansas City would come in as a huge favorite. You may be a little tight. Tennessee's playing with house money. This is what they did last year to Baltimore. They get a little hot. They're healthy. They take a lead. You look up and you're like, Tannehill hits two big throws. Game over. So I think Tennessee's pretty good. I think they are. All right, we're done for the day. Baseball playoffs. I think tomorrow we have Chris Collinsworth on the show. I think we have very good guests tonight. I'll take Lakers over the Heat by 10. You,
I'm gonna stick with my Heat.
I really appreciate your loyalty.
I gotta be loyal.
When do the Yankees play again, Goulet?
Today.
They play today.
Yes.
Well, they struggled all year with Tampa. So they were 2-8.
They struggled yesterday.
2-8. When I was a kid,
great yesterday.
Yankees struggle against weird teams. Tampa gives them fits. When I was a kid, the Mariners owned the Yankees. Tom Pachorik and the Mariners, believe it or not. It's the Herd.